Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Text 17 from Canto 10, Chapter 87. And now the meter problem again. I don't know the proper meter. Vrittaya eva svashancha so vritto yadite nuvidha. Mahad aham adyo dadam ajasran yad anugrahataha. Purusha vidhon vayotra charamona mayadishu yaha. Sad asatak param tvam atayad esha avesham ritam. I'm sure there's a proper meter and I don't know what it is. So I'll go to the word for word. Dhritayaha bellows. Eva as if. Shvasanti they breathe. Asu vrittaha alive. Yadi if. Te, your, anuvidhava, faithful followers, mahat, the total material energy, aham, false ego, adayaha, and the other elements of creation, andam, the universal egg, asrijan, produced. Yet. Whose? Anugrahataha. By the mercy. Purusha. Of the living entity. Vidaha. According to the particular forms. Anvayaha. Whose entrance? Atra. Among these. Charamaha, the ultimate, anamaya adishu, among the manifestations, known as anamaya and so on. Yaha, who? Sat asataha, from gross and subtle matter, param, distinct. Tvam, you, atha, and furthermore, yet, which, eshu, among these, avashesham, underlying, ritam, the reality. Translation. Only if they become your faithful followers are those who breathe actually alive. Otherwise, their breathing is like that of a bellows. It is by your mercy alone that the elements beginning with the Mahatattva and false ego created the egg of this universe among the manifestations known as Anamoya and so forth. You are the ultimate one entering within the material coverings along with the living entity. and assuming the same forms as those he takes, distinct from the gross and subtle material manifestations, you are the reality underlying them all. Purport for 5 pages. Hope you all stay awake. Life is without purpose for one who remains ignorant of his most well-wishing benefactor and thus fails to worship him. Such a person's breathing is no better than the breathing of a blacksmith's bellows. The gift of human life is a fortunate opportunity for the conditioned soul, but by turning away from the Lord, the living being commits spiritual suicide. In the words of Sri Isha Upanishad, Asriya namate loka antena tamasavritaha tangste pretyam abhigacchanti yeke chatma hano janaha. Translation, the killer of the soul, whoever may be, must enter the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Asriya means, quote, to be obtained by demons. And demons are persons who have no devotion for the Supreme Lord Vishnu. This definition is stated in Agni Purana. Dvau Bhuta Sarga Lokesmin Daiva Asura Evacha Vishnu Bhakti Parao Daiva Asurastad Viparyayaha. Translation. There are two kinds of created beings in this world, godly and demoniac. Those dedicated to devotional service of Lord Vishnu are godly, and those opposed to such service are demoniac. Paragraph. Similarly, the Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad 4.4.15 states, Na ched avedin mahati Vinashtihi yad te vidur amritas te bhavanti ate tare dukham evo payanti. If one does not come to know the Supreme, he must suffer utter destruction. Those who realize the Supreme become immortal, but others inevitably suffer. A person must revive his Krishna consciousness to be relieved of the suffering caused by ignorance, but the process by which this is done need not be difficult, as Lord Krishna assures us in Bhagavad Gita. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evaishasi yuktvaivam atmanam matparayanaha. Translation. Engage your mind in always thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me, and worship me by being completely absorbed in me. Surely you will come to me. There's one page of 4 more pages. Despite disqualifications and weaknesses, one need only willingly become anuvidha, or the Supreme Lord's trusting and trustworthy servant. The Katha Upanishad proclaims, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yovedadhati Kaman Tam Pitagam Ye Nupashyanti Dhiras Tesham Shanti Shashvati Netaresham. Translation. Among all the eternal conscious beings, there is one who supplies the needs of everyone else, the wise souls who worship him in his abode attain everlasting peace. Others cannot. So all of that is along the same theme. Without connecting with the personality of God in devotion, one's breathing is no better than the bellows of the blacksmith. Same message from Canto 2. Only this is just expanding it. What is alive and what is dead? The bodies and minds of materialistic non-devotees seem to display the symptoms of life, but this appearance is deceptive. Actually, the conditioned soul has little control over his own bodily existence against his will. He has to excrete waste, get sick from time to time, and eventually age and die. And his mind, he unwillingly suffers anger, hankering, and lamentation. Lord Krishna describes this situation as yantra rudhani mayaya, Bhagavad Gita 18:61, riding helplessly as a passenger in a mechanical vehicle. The soul undoubtedly is alive, and irrevocably so, but in his ignorance, that inner life is covered and forgotten. In its place, the automaton of the external mind and body carries out the dictates of the modes of nature, which force one to act in a way altogether irrelevant to the dormant needs of the soul. Calling out to this forgetful prisoners of illusion, the Shvetashvatara Upanishad urges, Shrinvanti Vishve Amritasya Putra Aye Dhamani Divanani Tastuhu. All you sons of immortality, hear, you who once resided in the divine kingdom. So, on the one hand, what is normally viewed as living, or the material body, it is in actuality a dead machine being manipulated by the modes of nature. On the other hand, what the materialist condescendingly views as inert matter, meant for exploitation, is its own unknown essence connected with a living intelligence vastly more potent than his own. The Vedic civilization recognizes the intelligence behind nature as belonging to demigods who preside over various elements and ultimately to the Supreme Lord himself. Matter, after all, cannot act coherently without the impulse and guidance of a living force. Yeah, that's 2 pages out of 5. So, the first section is this living, is the breathing of a person that's not Krishna conscious or mindful of his connection with the Supreme is just going on mechanically, like the bellows of a blacksmith. And then this section is behind the machine, there's the conscious Supreme Person. And, of course, Krishna consciousness means to connect with that conscious Supreme Person, without which matter doesn't move. Because matter moves, one can say, by the modes of nature, but who is the controller of the modes of nature? That supreme conscious being who's behind the modes of nature that then moves the machine. As Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam Hetunani Nukonteya Jagatvi Parivartate. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Now it goes into the process of creation, how it got to where it is today. In the beginning of creation, Lord Mahavishnu glanced at the dormant material nature Prakriti, Thus awakened, the subtle Prakriti began to evolve into more concrete forms. First, the Mahat, then false ego in conjunction with each of Prakriti's three modes, and gradually the various material elements, including intelligence, mind, the senses, and the five physical elements with their presiding demigods. Even after becoming separately manifested, however, the deities responsible for the various elements could not work together to produce the perceptible world until Lord Vishnu, by his mercy, once more intervened. This is described in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 3:5-38-39. I'm very familiar with this, having just taught Brahma Samhita. So, minus the Sanskrit translation, the controlling deities of these physical elements are empowered expansions of Lord Vishnu. They are embodied by eternal time under the external energy, and they are his parts and parcels because they were entrusted with different functions of universal duties and were unable to perform them. They offered fascinating prayers to the Lord. The demigods said, O Lord, your lotus feet are like an umbrella for the surrendered souls, protecting them from all the miseries of material existence. All the sages under that shelter throw off all material miseries. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto your lotus feet. Well, he said some other things too. They prayed for two things. They prayed for the intelligence and also the strength or ability to work cooperatively to perform their function, collective and combined function. Let's see what else happens here. So there's three pages. Only two more to go. Whoops. One, two. Four more to go. Excuse me. Hearing these prayers of the assembled demigods of the elements, the Supreme Lord then showed his favor. And it goes to the next chapter, 3:6-1-3, where Bhagavatam says, the Lord thus heard about the suspension of the progressive creative functions of the universe due to the non-combination of his potencies, such as the Mahatattva. The Supreme Powerful Lord then simultaneously entered into the 23 elements with the goddess Kali, his external energy, who alone amalgamates all the different elements. Thus, when the personality of Godhead entered into the elements by his energy, all the living entities were enlivened into different activities, just as one is engaged in his work after awakening from sleep. Paragraph. In Krishna, so that's the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada explains the five levels of ego covering the self. Quote, within the body there are five different departments of existence known as anamaya, pranamaya, manomaya, vijnanamaya, and at last anandamaya. Brackets. These are enumerated in the Brahmananda Vali of the Taittiriya Upanishad. Of course, it's also in the purport of Bhagavad Gita, if you're familiar. Anamaya, vijnanamaya. Anamaya, pranamaya. In the list in Bhagavad Gita, instead of manamaya, it's vijnanamaya, then Vijnanamoya and Anandamoya. But anyway, here's the five different types of false ego. In the beginning of life, every living entity is food conscious. A child or an animal is satisfied only by getting nice food. This stage of consciousness, in which the goal is to eat sumptuously, is called anamoya. Anna means food. After this, one lives in the consciousness of being alive. If one can continue his life without being attacked or destroyed, one thinks himself happy. This stage is called pranamoya, or consciousness of one's existence. After this stage, when one is situated on the mental platform, that consciousness is called manomaya. The material civilization is primarily situated in these three stages: anamoya, pranamoya, and manomoya. The first concern of civilized persons is economic development. The next concern is defense against being annihilated. And the next consciousness is mental speculation, the philosophical approach to the values of life. Paragraph, apparently continuing a quote from Krishna book. If by the evolutionary process of philosophical life one happens to reach to the platform of intellectual life and understands that he is not this material body but a spirit soul, one is situated in Vijnanamaya stage. Then by evolution of spiritual life he comes to understand the Supreme Lord or the Supreme Soul. When one develops his relationship with him and executes devotional service, that stage of life is called Krishna consciousness, the Anandamaya stage. Anandamaya is the blissful life of knowledge and eternity. As it is stated in the Vedanta Sutra, Anandamayo Vyasat, the Supreme Brahman and the subordinate Brahman, or the person, Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities, are both joyful by nature. As long as the living entities are situated in the lower four stages, anamoya, pranamoya, manamoya, and vijnanamoya, they are considered to be in the material condition of life. But as soon as one reaches to the stage of anandamaya, he becomes a liberated soul. This anandamaya stage is explained in Bhagavad Gita as the Brahmabhuta stage. There it is said, that in the Brahmabhuta stage of life, there is no anxiety and no hankering. This stage begins when one becomes equally disposed towards all living entities, and it then expands to the stage of Krishna consciousness, in which one hankers to render service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This hankering for advancement in devotional service is not the same as hankering for sense gratification in material existence. In other words, hankering remains in spiritual life, but it becomes purified. When our senses are purified, they become freed from all the material stages, namely anamoya, pranamoya, manamoya, and vijnanamoya, and they become situated in the highest stage, anandamaya, or blissful life in Krishna consciousness. Okay, so now we have just 1.5 page left. You're doing pretty good. An endurance test. Okay, so there's one more paragraph from Krishna book. The Mayavadi philosophers consider Anandamaya to be the stage of being merged in the Supreme. To them, Anandamaya means that the super soul and the individual soul become one. But the real fact is that oneness does not mean merging into the Supreme and losing one's own individual existence. Merging into the Supreme existence is the living entity's realization of qualitative oneness with the Supreme Lord in his eternity and knowledge aspects.
But the actual anandamoya or blissful stage is obtained when one is engaged in devotional service. That is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Mad bhaktim labhate param. The Brahma-Bhuta anandamaya stage is complete only when there is the exchange of love between the supreme and the subordinate living entities. Unless one comes to this anandamaya stage of life, his breathing is like the breathing of the bellows of a blacksmith's shop. His duration of life is like that of a tree, and he is no better than the lower animals like camels, hogs, and dogs. It's
referencing Canto 2, Chapter 3, where that series of verses are presented. Okay, next paragraph. In accompanying the jiva, within the coverings of maya, the Paramatma is not bound by karmic entanglement as the jiva is. Rather, the supersoul's connection with these coverings is like the apparent connection between the moon and some tree branches. It is seen through. What does that mean? There's a tree, there's the moon. We say, oh, there's the moon. See that in, right there in those branches of the tree? But the moon is not in the branches of the tree. It's a, from our vantage point, it's in that direction, and it seems to be, but it's not in the branches of the tree. Similarly, Supersoul is not within the material elements and conditioned by material elements or something foolish like that. The Supersoul is Sad Asataha Param, always transcendental to the subtle and gross manifestations of Anamoya and so on. Although he enters among them as the sanctioning witness of all activities. As their final cause, the Supreme Soul, the Supersoul, is in one sense identical with the manifest products of creation, but in his original identity or Svarup, he remained distinct. In this second sense, he is the Anandamaya alone, the last of the five koshas, states of consciousness. Therefore, the Shrutis address him here as Avashesham, Avashesham, the residual essence of Avashesham, the residual essence. This is also expressed in the text of Taittiriya Upanishad, Rasovai Saha, within his personal essence. The Supreme Lord enjoys rasa, the reciprocation of the mellows of devotional service, and integral to the play of rasas is the participation of the realized jivas. Rasa vaisaha rasam ye vayam labhadavanti bhavanti labhadavanandi bhavanti. He is the embodiment of rasa, and the jiva who realizes this rasa becomes fully ecstatic. Or, in the words of the personified Vedas praying in this verse, the Supersoul is ritam, that which Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur interprets as here meaning realized by great sages. Ritam. Okay, two more paragraphs and we're done. In the opinion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the last word of all authoritative scripture, Sarvantima Shruti, is contained in the aphorism Rasovai Saha, which is demonstrably a reference to Lord Sri Krishna as the infinitely
expanding embodiment of divine pleasure. Sarva Brihatma Nanda. The Gopal Company Shruti states, Yo Sau Jagrat Svapna Susuptim Atitya Turyatito Gopalaha. Translation: Lord Krishna, the cowherd, transcends not only the material consciousness of wakefulness, dream, and deep sleep, but also the fourth realm of pure spiritual awareness. Interesting. The Anandamaya Supersoul is simply an aspect of the primeval Lord Govinda as declared by him, taken from Bhagavad Gita 10:42. Vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam ekangshena stato jagat. With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. Okay, concluding. The Shrutis thus tactfully assert that even among the various personal forms of Godhead, Krishna is supreme. Understanding this, Narada Muni will later offer obeisances to Lord Krishna in the words, Namastasmai Bhagavate Krishna Yamala Kirtaye. Apparently, text 46 of this chapter. Even though he, that's Krishna, is standing in front of Lord Narayana Rishi. Final. Srila Sridhar Swami concludes his comments on this verse by praying, quote, O Lord Narahari, persons who have attained this human form of life uselessly, merely breathing like bellows, if they fail to worship you by hearing about you, chanting your glories, remembering you, and performing the other devotional practices. Well, my goodness, this is really... Well, an intricate purport in a very expanded chapter. And many things are being presented in one little verse. We'll go back to the context. The personified Vedas are being quoted or referenced by Shukadeva Goswami to respond to a question asked by Maharaj Parikshit. How is it that something material, the tongue and the ear, can elevate one's consciousness and create apparently something spiritual from something material? To me that seems contradictory, although I'm experiencing spiritual consciousness. After hearing the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam up to this part, not just the 10th canto, but all the first 9 and the 10th canto, he's in ecstasy, completely transcendental to anything material. And he's wondering then, how did this happen? Because I've just been sitting here listening. And you've been using something material, I've been using something material, how did it happen? It's a profound philosophical question. And impersonalists don't get it. They don't get it because they don't want to get it. They don't want to get the idea that the message that's being spoken in the reply by the personified Vedas is, in the impersonal sense, there's a supreme Brahman from which everything of this realm comes, and so there's an inextricable relationship between all things that emanate from their source and the source. So that part is, you know, the oneness aspect, but then there's a difference aspect along with the oneness aspect, and they're simultaneous. And the difference aspect
Well, there's many ways to describe the difference, but certainly that which comes from the source is not the source. The sunshine is not the sun. A ray of sunshine is not the sun. There's the energetic and there's the energy, and there's a difference. That's one. Another feature of that difference, however, yesterday's verse and this morning's verse, where there's some emphasis going, is that Supreme Brahman is ultimately a person. And beyond the Anamoya stage, he who is the shelter of the five, starting from Anamoya to Anandamoya, he who is the shelter of those five is beyond those five. Logically, that makes sense. So the commonly we hear, I didn't reference the Bhagavad Gita description before reading this, but commonly the Anandamoya stage is realization of the personality of Godhead. Not realization of Brahmananda, but the Paramananda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But yesterday's verse and today's verse, these very special, amongst the Shrutis, there are different Shrutis. These are the most elevated amongst the Shrutis, where they're saying, no, not just the impersonal Brahman, that kind of is the source of everything, but there's a person beyond that impersonal Brahman. He wants the book. There's a person who is, well, not exactly beyond the impersonal Brahman, but who is the basis and support of the impersonal Brahman. Brahmano hi pratishtaham, from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14. Chapter 14 is about the modes of nature. So, almost all the verses are about the modes of nature and how the modes of nature influence, condition a living entity. And at the end, Krishna admits or expresses there are some living entities that are not influenced by the modes of nature. So Arjuna wants to know, well, what does that look like? What are the symptoms of those who are beyond the modes of nature? And how do they achieve that condition of being beyond the modes of nature, which is being referenced in the verse in this purport we discussed a little bit yesterday, the Brahma-Bhuta stage. There's two verses in the Bhagavad Gita where the Brahma-Bhuta term is indicated, and they're important verses. Both are very important verses. Brahma-Bhuta, Prasanatma. It's not quoted here, but referenced in this purport. Na sochati, na kangsati, no hankering or lamenting for something temporary. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu, one sees all living entities equally. The way that this purport is written, I'm sure it's according to the teachings of the acharyas. Those are preliminary qualities. And following those preliminary qualities of being on the Brahma-Bhuta stage, the spiritual platform, no hankering, lamenting, seeing all living entities equally, although bodily they're different and mentally they're different, but spiritually they're equal. Madbhaktim labhate param. Someone comes to this higher, that Anandamoya. That Anandamoya stage. The devotional service to the Madbhaktim. So devotional service, the inference is, devotional service is beyond liberation. It's acting on the liberated platform, but it's beyond liberation because in that liberated state, one's consciousness is fully absorbed in the Supreme Person, Mad Bhaktim. They're engaging their senses in the service of the Master of the Senses, engaged in bhakti, but beyond the platform of liberation.
Jai Goswami was mentioning this in his question after class yesterday. There's this there's the Purushartha, that's the Dharma Artha Kama Moksha, doing religious activity, Dharma, for the purpose of economic development, for the purpose of improving sense gratification, and ultimately striving for liberation. So his point yesterday was, our acharyas teach, which is the same thing that's here, that there's a stage beyond that, beyond sayuja, merging with Brahman, losing one's identity, so-called, because you can't, but suspending individuality and merging with Brahman. Beyond that is exercising one's spiritual individuality in service to the senses of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the fifth stage, beyond those four. Just to mention it again, it's a subtle point. Maybe, you know, beyond our necessity to pay much attention to, but please note, it's there. Yesterday's verse and again today's verse. These Shrutis are saying, even that stage of devotional service that's fixed upon the personality of Godhead, there's a mature condition of that. There's an immature, and there's a mature condition of that, which is beyond even the Anandamoya stage, where one's own happiness is not the interest. One's own happiness comes as a result of the happiness of Krishna, like the residents of Vrindavan. Their happiness is simply the happiness of Krishna, whatever that means. If it means they go to hell to give Krishna dust from their feet to get rid of his headache, they'll go to hell. Their happiness is not the consideration. It's the happiness of Krishna. Total self-sacrifice, or with an intense degree of love. That's what these Shrutis are advocating. And now going down from that a bit to just these comparative states of consciousness is specifically indicated here at the stages of false ego, anamoya, pranamoya. From Bhagavad Gita, I'm far more familiar with it than jnanamoya. Distinguishing the living entity from matter. So everything is food, like a child, whatever they can get their hands on goes in their mouth. Doesn't matter what it is, a shoe or a book or, you know, anything goes in the mouth. That's the state of consciousness. And then there's some distinction between inert matter and their brother or sister. You know, put their ear of their brother or sister in their mouth. It's like that's living. The living force is distinct from dull matter. Shoes go on the feet, not on the mouth. And so they're making distinctions between things, particularly pranamoya, life, living symptoms, and different objects. And then the distinction between the soul, that's jnana. Here it's mana. But with the mind, at least, analyzing the distinction between matter and spirit. That's nice. And we belong to the category of spirit instead of matter. So that's jnanamoya. And then making the next distinction, there's a supreme from whom all matter and spirit comes. And acting in that consciousness of the Supreme, at least in a preliminary stage, and then experience the ultimate happiness of being connected with the Supreme while we're moving about the realm of matter or wherever Krishna takes us, That's the Anandamaya stage. So he, what the verse is saying is, you are the source of all those, beginning with Anamaya, etc. You alone are the beginning of the elements that make up these Anamaya, etc. things, starting with the Mahat, and then false ego in its different stages, known as Anamaya and so forth. You're the shelter of everything. Behind everything, there's you. So the Shrutis are making that statement. And even the demigods who are presiding over the elements, I'll just go through this a little bit because I spent a lot of time discussing this over Thanksgiving weekend, Brahma Samhita. In the process of creation, I'll just do it quickly. As described here, Mahavishnu glances over Pradhan. He wishes that the reflective or reflection of his internal potency, who is known in the language of Brahma Samhita as Chaya, or shadow energy, she's the shadow of his internal potency, Rama. He wants to give her some service. He knows that she wants some service, and he's compassionate and wishes for her to have something to do. So he gives her something to do, and he does it just by his glance, because his glance is very powerful. With his glance, Rama entrusts the living entities who are dormant in their susupti state during cosmic annihilation. She, all of those, I forget, there's a Sanskrit term indicating all living entities. It starts with an S. All, that's a lot of living entities. Not just living entities in this universe, in all the universes, all the living entities. And all of the dormant state of their karma, that's a lot of karma too, is entrusted to the glance by Rama Devi, along with his time energy. And when that time energy and the living entity's contacts Pradhan, it's impregnation. Living entities are injected within that womb of Pradhan. And the Pradhan becomes agitated. And it transforms from Pradhan, which is unmanifested totality of the material energy, undifferentiated into its parts, starts separating out into parts. And the first transformation is called Mahat. It's like the egg or the unfertilized egg becoming fertilized. And so then there's a difference between the unfertilized and the fertilized, and that difference in this case is called Mahatattva. And the Mahatattva first then generates or separates out false ego. And false ego then starts mixing or interacting with the modes of nature. Because also the modes of nature, during the cosmic annihilation, they're dormant. They have nothing to do. Now they have something to do. They interact with false ego. And false ego in contact with intelligence, excuse me, false ego in contact with the mode of goodness creates the material mind. False ego in contact with passion creates material intelligence. And false ego in contact with the mode of ignorance separates out from Pradhan the five gross elements, then in turn the five knowledge acquiring senses, the five working senses, and the five objects of the senses. And so we have all the elements. And these listed in there is 23. And then there's 24 elements. So it's caused by that impregnation or the glance of Mahavishnu contacting Pradhan. Now there's these 24 elements. The next thing that happens is Mahavishnu Within his transcendental body, he has transcendental seeds, bijas, seeds of the universes, and they're spiritual. And he exhales, and those seeds of the universes move. It's described in the verse of the Bhagavatam like particles of dust moving through a screen. You've seen that sometimes in the morning, this morning light and the dust particles coming and going through the screen. Like that, the seeds of the universes, golden in color, they enter into the Mahatattva, and the elements cling, those 24 elements cling and start to enlarge the universes. Each of those elements, similarly, from Mahavishnu, there are different than the demigods within each universe, because each universe isn't set up yet, it's not functioning yet. So they're called, by Bhaktisiddhanta, prototype demigods who preside, they're demigods that preside over a particular element. And the demigods get this realization that we can't create our product. We have service to do. We're to take these elements and create a universe, but we don't know how to do it. We don't have the intelligence or capacity to do it. So they pray. We read the prayers. And there's more of them. There's like 10 verses of prayers. Who are they praying to? Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu hears their prayer and then responds by expanding Shiradakshai Vishnu within each element, with each atom of each element, along with the verse. In the Sanskrit word is Kali, and it's explained two things. Kali is used because it's the energy of combining, and it's actually time. That's the second part of what's said in the commentary. Kala. Now, time was already there to agitate Pradhan to make the 24 elements come out. Time, again, is essential. It's, I'll say it. When Shiradakshai Vishnu enters, he entered with his own potency. That means his internal potency. His internal potency can expand herself, and she does, for the purpose of creation, to assist the Supreme Lord, who doesn't have anything to do with creation, but his expanded energies do. So this time energy, so both we can use the word Kala or Kali. But the commentary says, the word, Jiva Goswami says, the word Kali is used because this indicates the power to combine. When the power to combine, along with the Supreme Lord who supplies intelligence, then the demigods can start working out. They can combine this element with that element too. So then they create layers in a structured way around the universe. You read about that. Hear about that. There are seven layers, and each of those layers has a presiding demigod of those layers. They're not the demigods that are worshipped in the Vedas and worshipped in Karmakanda rituals. These are presiding over the elements in the shells or the coverings of the universe, and each of those demigods has a form of the Supreme Lord that they worship. For example, in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it said that Bhumi is the presiding demigod of the first covering of earth, and her worshipable deity is Varaha. And similarly, each of the coverings, there's a presiding person, and it's Brihad Bhagavatamrita describes as incredibly opulent. And each layer is more opulent, more opulent. It just keeps going on describing like that. Far more opulent than anything of heaven, far more opulent than of the planets above heaven, far more opulent than anything Gopa Kumar has experienced. So anyway, so there's these layers that have been formed, and then Mahavishnu expands within each universe as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and then the universe starts to expand that way. First there's layers so they can do their function, and then he enters as Garbhadakshay Vishnu within each universe. And then further things happen. Lord Brahma comes and so forth. So all of that's interesting. What's the relevance to our subject? The relevance is several things. One is that matter doesn't move without the touch of spirit. And Krishna is the controller of both the living entities and matter. So he's the ultimate touch, spiritual touch that moves things. So if he's the ultimate touch that moves things, then if the living entity wants to achieve transcendence, he has to connect with the source. That's the system of yoga, connecting with the source. And in the ultimate sense, he's a person. And so one has to connect with him in devotion to that person. And the final message is, as one connects with him in devotion as a person, there is a stage that's reached that's even beyond Anandamaya, where the essence is the essence of rasa. That's the teaching that we're receiving here in this purport. That's towards the end. So this Anandamaya stage, what is the nature of that Anandamaya? Anandamaya, it's spiritual happiness. It's the soul being connected with the Supreme Soul in a loving relationship. That's what rasa is. That's the topmost stage of this Anandamaya, or beyond the normal sense of Anandamaya that the impersonalists think of. Far beyond that, as we heard. They like to say this Anandamaya stage is we give up our individuality and merge with Supreme Brahman. Boy, is that bliss. And according to the Vaishnava Acharyas, well, directly according to Srimad Bhagavatam, that happiness is compared in Bhagavatam to the amount of water in the hoofprint of a calf to a whole ocean of happiness. Not a whole lot of happiness in comparison. But then, again, this mature stage of that is not considering one's happiness, but considering in love the happiness of the Supreme only. And the intensity of that quality of love is Krishna. It's accessible for those who are fixed in pure devotional service exclusive. Pure devotional service. That's the message in however many pages the purport is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Not 5 pages, 7 pages. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? This is a challenging chapter. Yeah. Yes. You heard that yesterday. What's the difference? Okay. The similarity, first of all, is they're both on the Brahma-Bhuta stage. They're on the platform of in touch with spirit, and specifically in touch with Krishna. The Swarup-Gata stage is where one has realization of or an understanding of Krishna, but at the same time some contact with matter,
and some affinity for being in contact with matter. And the vastugata is no affinity for contact with matter. I gave two examples. One was Lord Brahma, after his realization in the Govinda prayers, he realized his identity and realized Govinda, but he still has some attraction for creating a universe. Of course, that's given to him or invested in him by the personality Godhead, but that's invested in him for a reason. He has some affinity. And by engaging, so Bhakti Vinod Thakur writes in his commentary of that verse 14:26 that we should strive to engage ourselves in devotional service from that platform so that we can come to the Vastugata stage. Exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita in the 12th chapter. One whose consciousness is fixed upon me and mind and fully engaged in thoughts of me, that person resides with me eternally in this life and in the next. 12th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. So, practice our, come to that stage and then practice our devotional service in that condition. And the Vastugata is the Nitya Siddha gopis or the Nitya Siddha devotees of Krishna, who the becoming perfect souls associate with in Krishna's earthly pastimes, for example. Any other questions? Yes?
Kali.
Yeah.
Kali.
It's the same name. It's the same name. Same name.
Not the same person.
It's an aspect of the same person. It's a little, it's subtle. You can look up the purport and read it carefully about 10 times. Because that's what I did to like get the subtlety. Because it's subtle, it's hard. You can't just glance over it and get it. But it's, you know, the 3:6, verses 1 and 2. Look it up and read it carefully. And if you have access, commentary by our acharyas also helps. I just keep it really simple. This is an essence response to your question. Yes, Parvati. But Parvati has a higher position and a lower position. Isn't it? From Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, when Lord Nityananda is taking Jiva Goswami to the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, right? You with me? And they go to Simantadweep, one of the nine islands. There's a description of Parvati hearing from, seeing Lord Shiva in a state of ecstasy like she's never seen. And he's calling out Gauranga's name and he's dancing wildly. And Parvati says, "Whoa, who's Gauranga? What's this?" And Lord Shiva says, "He's the personality of Godhead who appears in the place of Navadvip and he gives love of God to everyone freely." And she asks permission, "I want to go there. I want to chant Gauranga's name. I want to meet Gauranga." So he gives her permission. She goes. She comes to Simantadweep. She does her austerities and calls out Gauranga and he comes before her. And she offers a prayer and goes essentially like this: "O Supreme Lord, I am most unfortunate, because it is said that Maya can never touch the Supreme Lord.
So I'm on this side of the river Virajah, and you're always on that side. And I can never have your association because Maya can't come anywhere near the Supreme Lord. And I have the service of keeping all the conditioned souls very busy in their worldly activities. And I can never, there's never an opportunity to directly serve you. So please help me. Please give your mercy upon me. And he gives this fabulous answer. That's one's worth this reading, 20 times. But he says, "My dear Devi, please have no anxiety. You are my internal potency, assisting me in my pastimes in the spiritual world. And similarly, you are assisting me in my pastimes in this world. You are one and the same, Parvati." So there's the higher, it's subtle. There's the higher aspect and there's the lower aspect. Like, for example, in the pastime we're all very familiar with, where the seventh child of Devaki is in the womb, that's Balaram. So Bhagavatam describes, Krishna then calls Yogamaya, correct? And says, "Yogamaya, I have some services for you." Yes, yes, service. Transfer Balaram from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. And I give you the strength. He's heavy, but I give you the strength. You can do it. Second, then you appear in the womb of Yashoda, as I will appear as the eighth child in the womb of Devaki. And then when you're born, the third service is Vasudev, my father, will carry me to the side of Yashoda, place me by the side of Yashoda, and bring you back to the prison, and Kamsa will try to kill you. Don't worry, he won't be able to kill you. And then the fourth service is you'll go through different parts of the land, be known as Ambika and Parvati, etc., etc. One entity, Yogamaya, being understood in different ways according to what? Yayatamam prapadyante, tangstatava bhajamyam. According to how people regard Krishna, they'll see her in a different way. Correct? One person, Yogamaya, over here, and Parvati and Ambika and Kali and all those other names, according to how people see her. And they want material boons. They don't want Krishna. They want material boons. So that's how they see her, and they worship her for those reasons. Okay. Now go back to the verse 3:6:1. He entered with Kali. It's the higher. But she has her capacity to transform herself for the purpose of serving the Supreme Lord and His energies. She does that through, according to Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the power to combine. Because that's the issue. The demigods are not able to work cooperatively. In Bhaktisiddhanta's language, is the non-application of the conglomerating principle. That's what he's talking about. They can't work together. The conglomerating principle is invested by Vishnu through his Kali or Kala, time. Because you need that to bring things together. Otherwise they don't come together. So your question, now back to your question, is it the same as the consort of Lord Shiva? Yes, depending upon how you understand the function that's just going on. Just like time. Time in the spiritual world is eternal. The verse says that, well, I'll read it. They're covered by bodies of eternal time, the demigods. Here. This is the bottom of page 624, halfway through the purport. Reading from
3:5-38. The controlling deities of these physical elements are empowered expansions of Lord Vishnu. They are embodied by eternal time. Not the other kind, not the one that we're used to. Under the external energy. Whoops. Because they have a function. So they're dealing with the external. He doesn't deal with the external energy. On his behalf, they do. So they're embodied by eternal time under the external energy. So it's like a contradiction. It's a little puzzling. And they are his parts and parcels. So they're jivas. They're empowered jivas. They're not the, you know, not the demigods of the universe. There's no universe yet. They're prototype persons that are empowered, embodied by eternal time, under the external energy, and still they can't make their product. They can't get together and work together. So they pray. Help! We need your intervention here. We need... So it's 10 verses, but their prayer is specifically for the intelligence, to understand how to do their service, and the capacity to do it. Because sometimes we know what to do, but we just like feel we can't do it. We have the capacity, we don't know how to do it. So they're asking for both. So then he enters with his Kali. So depending upon, my answer is depending upon how you perceive him, it's Garbhadakshay Vishnu, or excuse me, Shiradakshay Vishnu. Here's the translation. The Lord thus heard about the suspension of the progressive creative functions of the universe due to the non-combination of his potencies, such as the Mahatattva. The Supreme Lord then simultaneously entered. So he entered. And who enters with him? Spiritual or material? Spiritual. But she can act for his service by transforming herself appropriately for his service. Just like Yogamaya did to, according to Krishna's instruction. After Kamsa can't kill you, you have another service. But it's like a transformation of her. The Supreme Lord then simultaneously entered into the 23 elements with the goddess Kali, comma, his external energy, comma, who alone amalgamates all the different elements. She does her service. She gets the elements to cooperate, like a temple commander or something. Okay, guys, let's, you know, you wash the pots and you clean the floor and you cut the vegetables. Let's go. More? It's subtle. And, you know, we're accustomed to it's got to be this or that. You know, that's our limited analytical capacity. It can't be this and that. It's got to be this or that. And it's the same rule doesn't apply with these potencies of the Supreme Lord. They act as the Lord wishes them to act. As Rama Devi, there's Chaya Devi. As there's Yogamaya, there's Ambika, etc. Her expansion. There's eternal time, and there's this relative time. For the purpose of the function the Lord desires. They can do whatever the Lord wishes to carry out his service. Like the gopis that worship goddess Katyayani. Well, she's a demigod. And devotees of Krishna don't worship demigods. So the commentary says it was actually the spiritual Katyayani, or Yogamaya, to facilitate pastimes with Krishna.
depends on how one regards Krishna, as to whether Katyayani will act this way or that way. And these are living entities that they're awaiting for their karma to be fulfilled, or, you know, to be like activated again, because it's dormant. And so by this entrance of the combining force, Kali, the combining force, so the elements can work cooperatively, and another potency that was sent forth at the time of creation called Kriya Shakti, force of activity. Then that force of activity, Kriya Shakti, starts activating the karma of the living entity that previously was suspended. So that's how it gets activated. How does it get deactivated? The Supreme Lord pulls back his time potency. He doesn't do it. Ramadevi does it. She extended it. She withdraws it. And when time is withdrawn, time energy, what happens? Everything collapses. We need time to for things to happen, material things. So he gives that energy. Here is Kali to combine. Yes? Kala means time. Kala means time. And time acts differently according to the position of the living entity. Let's just think in terms of Lord Brahma's time and our time and an insect's time. It's time. It's 4 minutes before 9. That's what time it is. But what we're experiencing time, and the living entity, the insect that's crawling across the floor is time, and Lord Brahma's, it's the same time, but experienced differently according to what? Our consciousness, our Krishna consciousness, ultimately. That determines our consciousness. That's Kala. It acts differently according to on the different living entities. And then there's eternal time. And actually all there is eternal time. This other one is an illusory sense. It's a fascinating topic. Time is a fascinating topic. So what we need to do is direct our attention to Krishna, re-enter into eternal time, and, business finished. No more temporary time, up and down, higher, lower, and somewhere in between. Wishing for a higher, being afraid of a lower. And then when the higher comes, being afraid we'll lose the higher. All of that. Material consciousness. Just Krishna consciousness. And then it's eternal time forever. Okay. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai. Sorry, it's a little technical, but that's the subject matter that we're reading from. I didn't pick the verse.